phasing out in incineration at sea. I'm giving these names when you read the papers, etc. Something, oh, this is what why we have this Oslo dumping, etc. Because everything at sea, who's worried really what happens miles away? Sewage disposal of Bombay, 39,000 tons of DDT, 110,000 tons of detergent, ship bilges, etc. are pumped out every year of Bombay. The pollution of heavy metal, oil, pesticides, you just name it, is just pushed into the sea. So what we require is an integrated global ocean station system, IGOS, where we have a global investigation of pollution and marine environment. This is called GMPIE. These are all existing now. UN Environment Program, UNEP, and the Working Committee for Training, Evaluation, and Medical, TIMA, for ocean waste. Coming a little bit down to the ocean climate, you've had Rio, you've read about global warming, the CFCs, how the global climate and the precipitation will change because of 300 million, 18 billion tons of carbon dioxide is pumped into the air beside the CFC vessel pollution. But these have become today a very fashionable subject. There's enough focus on environment, enough focus on this, but unfortunately not enough on the oceans as such. Other important subject I'll define is coastal zone management. I've taken it out separately to pinpoint it. What is the coastal zone? I was asked this question yesterday. It is conventionally the landward and seaward extension of 20 kilometers from the shoreline. The enormous resources attract a variety of uses for the coastal zone management, sea farming, fisheries, ports, harbors, industrial complexes, hotels, waste disposal, land reclamation, hydrocarbons, tourism, leisure sports. The entire thing is coastal management. The storehouse, this shoreline is invariably threatened with the problems, erosion, flooding, wave, action, pollution. And you know about the putting up hotels, pollution, what's happening politically also. The sensitive coastal zone demands a long-term strategy for multiple development with the indiscriminate exploitation. And what we use the coast is beside the marine sanctuaries, we have recreation facilities, habitats, coastal shipping, oil and gas reserve, bacterial species to degrade, toxic chemicals, surveying, waste desalinization, overcrowding, pollution of minerals, etc. For this, different countries approach coastal zone management in different ways. In America, you have the Coastal Zone Management Act, establishes a partner between the federal and the state for effective control and management. In England and Wales, there's no national act like the British system, but a complex system of public and private control of coastline and waters with the National Trust plays a significant part. In France, government directly engages in coastal resource deployment through special inter-ministerial committees. In India, we enacted the Maritime Zones Act of 1976. This specifies the number of actions to be taken by central government, but is not clear which ministry will be responsible for according sanction and approval. This has been further complicated by the fact that in certain matters, such as fisheries, mineral development, the state government exercises legislative powers in respect of the territorial waters as provided in the Constitution. So therefore, nothing is happening. There's a jamming up between state and federal on this coastal management. They're looking into it just now. I will just mention Antarctica. It's the biggest ice planet. 70% of the fresh water comes from there. It's a 90% of worldwide ice is from there. And 100 million gallons of seawater dissolves down there. We've had, till to date, 12 expeditions to Antarctica. We have got two stations, Gangotri and Maitri. It affects global climate, the southern marine economic system. There's a need for understanding the Antarctic, because we belong to the Antarctic Treaty, or the Scientific Committee on Antarctic Resources, SCAR, or the ATCP. Fortunately, we have just signed this treaty. Otherwise, till so far, it was very important. We have played a very important part on this.
You've got your director here knows a lot about this. We studied it when he was a secretary and minister.
So what then is the emerging trends about the oceans? See, developing countries consider oceans, outer space, etc. as a common heritage of mankind. But what have we done about it? The technology gap, the mismatch between the protectionism and globalized economy are really worrying us, because they've raised these issues in UNIDO, UNCTAD, UNCLOS, EC. You see this problem with GATT and all that is to do with this, the pressure behind this. In developed countries, partnerships between R&D, government, banking, like in Eureka, Esprit, Euromark, are leaving India and developed countries far behind. There's far more integrated approach down there on the seas. Therefore, in a two-sector economy, ocean economy will grow at 2 to 3 times that of land economy. These are facts. 50% of the hydrocarbons will come from offshore by 2000 AD. Microorganisms will be used to leach metals on the seabed to avoid pollution. Computerized sail ships will reduce dependence on oil. Robo-controlled ships will carry cargoes with efficiency. Fish farming and genetic engineering will increase the harvesting threefold. So we have to generate learning, new vistas for employment that are coming up. Like we want managers for marine parks, tourism, marine environment, toxicology, marine archaeology. We had a good lecture. Marine veterinary science, marine electronic, aquaculture engineering, information science and technology, marine instrumentation, etc. What I'm saying, the new subjects are coming on, and therefore in formal education, the UNESCO report of 1988 gives a challenge for you into 2000 AD, says, training and education essential to development and application of knowledge on the marine environment and its resources. For this, I'll just say, the new courses that have come out in other countries, ocean universities, we have no ocean universities in India, they are in other countries, like marine business, marine resource economics, marine medicine we have in Bombay, marine hydrography we have got in Goa, ocean engineering, a lot of it we have in IIT Madras, National Committee of Ocean Technology in IIT Madras again, at $1 million, and we have NSTL, NPL, diving systems, all that in India, but there's no integration on this. I have put across to you what I think should be an ocean university. It's just the 6 points that you got in front of you. We have a center for resource environment and living and ecological studies, both living and non-living, a center for geoengineering studies, land and water, a center for coastal zone management, a center for nautical resources, natural resources, center for development studies, a center for marine instrumentation, of course a database. This is only the first thing, goes on and on, because I would like to say a person like, place like NIO Goa, it's ideal to have a university, ocean university. There are ocean universities in Halifax, in Malta, in about 10 places, which I read out to you, but we have none. We have none. And the funding they're talking, there are so many funding agencies for the, I just recite them, UNESCO in Paris, FAO in Rome, IMO in London, that was made by our Srivastava, IOI, that is the International Ocean Institute in Malta, that we have an Indian director, Segal, doctor who was JIC and DOD earlier, ICOD in Halifax, UNEP in Kenya, IOC, International Ocean Commission, Paris, UN University in Japan, World Maritime University in Malbo, UNCTAD, WMO, etc. What's happening to us is, we're having as many as 16 ministries dealing with the oceans. For example, we have fishing, etc., dealt by Ministry of Agriculture and Food Processing. Then we have defense, surface transport for shipping, mines for mining, science and technology, revenue, geology survey, etc. In US, they have a US National Oceanic and Atmospheric Organization, which coordinates this. They have also got 12 or 13, not that most countries about 12 to 13 people dealing with this multidisciplinary functions. In France, we have the Ministry of Oceans. In Sri Lanka, we have the National Aquatic Resource Agency, NARA. In Pakistan, we have National Maritime Affairs Coordination Committee. In Beijing, we have the Ocean Department. And in India, we have really nothing. Because the DoD does only a very small bit of this. Others are completely different. So I put it to you, possibly we should have a National Ocean Authority in India, like the other one, like the NDC, National Development Council, the Island Development Authority, CSR, etc., which the Prime Minister presides, where it should be three-tier policy formulation, planning and coordination, implementation, with each ministry hanging on to its power and its money, taking sectorial responsibilities. This has been proposed. Hopefully, it will be proposed again. But we got to have this type of coordination, so don't have duplication and waste of money. This is what I thought I'll put it to you. In conclusion, say that as we enter the last decade of the 20th century, we're confronted with the mind-boggling emerging technologies such as microelectronics, biotechnology, new materials, you'll hear more of this, genetics, photonics, space, outer space, oceans leading to shifts in the pattern of industrialization. Therefore, the society of tomorrow is being described as the third or even the fourth industrial revolution. Ocean technology is, in a sense, the center of this change taking place because it has horizontal and vertical linkages. As we emphasize, the other cutting-edge technologies, by exploiting India's 2 million square kilometers of oceans, has got these type of linkages, which some of them we mentioned to you. This investment, therefore, of both human and economic resources in our oceanic inheritance, the skillful management of the tools of our maritime development, the study of interconnected disciplines for all-round growth, and the understanding of the seas around us will not only have a significant impact on our ocean wealth, but also a more meaningful growth rate in our incomes and employment. We are going to have, we are hoping to have a national seminar on the oceans. It was going to be last year, a national seminar, because the Vice President, who was our Chairman of the Indian Ocean Society, was not well. We'll have it sometime later. But we're going to get all the experts, plus all the people from Chambers of Commerce, industrialists, scientists, educationists, to have an integrated approach to this. And I hope when we advertise this, very happy it'll be in Delhi, if you all could come and attend it, at least pass the hat round that there are, India is still a peninsula. But the continued failure, ladies and gentlemen, of not understanding our ocean heritage, for curing India's continuing sea blindness, may not be readily visible, nor seemingly catastrophic, but it will further slow down India's faltering stride into the 21st century. I firmly believe that. This challenge of using the oceans and the seas for the betterment of our people may not be the single most important facet in the remaining decades of this century. But then, who knows? I like to conclude in verse before we have a short film showing you what is happening on the ocean bed. We just got it from Bhubaneswar for about 10-12 minutes, and then we'll go to questions and answers. And I thought I'll end up by saying, as each of you behold in cloud and fire the shape that answers your own desire, so thou in the sea shall find the figures and features of your mind. Thank you. This is some of the work actually done, because it's easier to tell you what is being done rather than just... And we gave up 50% based on the thesis, what is the yield of the polymeter? We already have taken 10, 20 tons out of these nodules and gone, as you said, to NML and to Bhubaneswar and looked at the yield and all that. Where there are the mounds, where the crawlers can't go, where there's a slope, where they can't operate, where there are holes they can't operate. Those are the regions we surrendered. And how we surrendered is rather interesting. Minister for this is the Prime Minister, as you know, and we're given 7 years to surrender this. We did very little. Last year he got very angry. We had Sagar Kanya, Gaveshni. We also took a ship, went down there, and we were able with a deep toe about to go and surrender this thing. But even what we have got, the feeling is in America, Japan, etc., it will become effective from 2015-80. This is the feeling. By which time, the prices on land will be so high that it will be effective to mine the oceans in a much more cost-effective way. They haven't found it. It may not be submersibles, it may not be the diagram I gave you, but it will have to come because the pressure on the population on land, it will drive the people to see for their future livelihood. From that point of view, they have made, United Nations has made this statement, these four statements. Because they have the United Nations Ocean Department in New York, by the way, that has been closed at the initiative of the Americans. I went to Woods Hole and asked, they all kept quiet, because there it is the big company, General Electric, etc., who developed this, the R&D is there, and they're not prepared to share it with developing countries. No big-heartedness in all these things, purely commercial from that point of view.
Because this we are discussing among ourselves, because the oceans are all supposed to be connected, and we felt that if the mineral, the salt content is uniform, why the manganese or the iron content should be different. In fact, the seabed in the Pacific Ocean is much better covered and it yields much more. Maybe the local conditions, you know, there is a supersaturation situation in the ocean, and the rate at which it precipitates, the extent of turbulence, temperature conditions, these might match up. Because it depends on the rate of sedimentation, the extent of turbulence that you get, and temperature conditions that initiate this precipitation that goes on at a very slow rate. As I said, it is 4 millimeters in a million years. So how the local conditions have been different in the 2 years, we are not able to say. But the fact is that it is predominantly localized in the Pacific and to some extent in the South Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean harvest is comparatively much less. Of course, very preliminary estimates have been made. At this stage, when we are comparing results on pressure leaching with sulfuric acid, where the recoveries are better, but the concentration of the metal values that you get in the solution are very low, so we've asked them to repeat it under different conditions so that the metal concentrations go up. Otherwise, you have to concentrate the liquor. But the recoveries are better in sulfuric acid medium. The pre-reduction rows that the NML has studied definitely gives good metallization, but they have to improve the recoveries. Right now they are in the range of about 80%. We would like it to be at least well above 90%. In the case of Bhubaneswar, they are getting good recoveries in sulfur dioxide ammonia leaching for copper and nickel, but the recoveries of cobalt have to be improved. So it will take another 1 year at least for them to improve the recoveries. Maybe double leaching may be needed in the case of RRL Bhubaneswar. Once the recoveries are in the region of 90% for nickel and copper, and at least 75-80% for cobalt, the indications are on a scale of 3 million tons per year, which will require an investment maybe of the order of about 1500 to 2000 crores. The recoveries, the yields will be break even. Yes. That's one aspect. The second is we should have as early as possible an indigenous resource for nickel, all the nickel. So side by side, the RRL Bhubaneswar is working on the lateritic deposit. The nickel reserve there comparable to the ocean deposit is at least half. They have about 10 million tons in the Sukinda ore. There is also the chromite overburden, which also contains significant nickel. They have established processes for nickel recovery from these sources, and they are looking for funds to set up a plant on a scale of about 2,000 tons of nickel per year, which may require an investment of the order of about 100 crores, which is reasonable investment to set up an indigenous capability. And once this is demonstrated, there are many steps in common between the land resource processing of nickel and also the ocean bed nodule processing. We have to, of course, break the problems with respect to mining. So that has to be pursued. But as an interim measure, at least two options should be considered for setting up the indigenous processing technology. One is processing of the lateritic deposit. The other one is we can even import nickel concentrates, which you can buy. We are importing nickel in various forms. And set up the downstream processing to get familiar with large-scale nickel technology. This also is being considered by the government. You must get the experience in processing on large scale.
I thought I'll add to that because of your question of the economics of this production. You know, it's more and more getting clear that our areas are very far, and where they're going to do this leaching, etc., is very far. So that is Orissa, some in Rajasthan, etc. It is not economics, it is not economic, commercial economics when we go into production. One of the things we have been saying is ocean-based industries should have factory ships, industrial ships based on that floating platform. We can easily do that. I mean, there's no difference to have it down there, so you don't have to travel. Even during this time, we were sending these nodules from near Mauritius to Bhubaneswar, etc., bringing it, keeping it, sending it. I had suggested for first to find out the yield. Is it possible to have two or three? You know, we have big ships, Sagar Kanyas and all that, with to do it and check before we start collecting 10 tons. Check first few, you know, kilos, and then go on next place, next place, next place. Hurry up this exploration and exploitation. And I have no doubt in my mind this factory ships, industry ships will come in the 21st century, for which we must gear up today.
Now, as you will understand, there is a deposition of minerals through the process of natural erosion deposited by the rivers. Even in the Orissa region, the mining now that is going on is partly on land and partly in the coastal sea. So the expectation is at least in the near coastal region, these deposits will extend. And that's also known to be true. Certainly there will be a certain dilution. We are talking of the concentration of the heavies. But in the wet dredger plant that has been set up at Orissa, there is of course mining, at the same time concentration with Humphrey spirals. And as Dr. Admiral Roy was mentioning, maybe we have to locate also spirals, the Humphrey spirals on board the ship, so that we transport only the heavies after the preliminary concentration. Seasonal variation will be there, even on the beach deposits with respect to the heavies.
But it's very true what you say. See, we are making these dredger systems. We are going to operate 5,000 meters. Please remember.
That is the deep
sea. When we go for our nodules.
The places should be close to, not the deep sea.
Therefore, we have said what we are making in CMRI, in Durgapur and all the things, please use them for these places. And for the, we asked the Geological Survey of India, and they have given these places, which is half land, half water. It's within 50 meters, 100 meters, the point you are making. These are between candidate sites for this, between Kalingapatnam and Gopalpur offshore, the joint project between rare earths and Japan, which you know, I know. Chaura near Alibi and off Ratnagiri, the Illuminati. So these things, as I start working on that and develop your technology as you go ahead. Don't plunge into the 5,000 meters overnight.
So these places we are talking close to the coast, not too far away, but there will be variations with respect to heavies. So this in fact is, if you are interested, there is a whole report brought out by NIO with the title From the First Nodule to the First Mine Site. And there they have described, once you are going out and you are locating, you must also place it with respect to the actual location. And they have used a variety of techniques. I'll read out to you. Initially, it was a land-based arrangement for as far as near locations. Once you go far out to sea, they are used even satellite communications. and wireless communications between the ship and the coast. That's what they have mentioned.
My second question. You know that we have to import
the nodules?
What is that?
No, if anything can be imported, two things. One is the availability of the resource. Secondly, the cost of the import you have to consider. Now, this is a, no, as I have already mentioned, if you look up the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says there are no ocean nodules in the Indian Ocean. Because the perception is that the major concentration is in the Pacific and to some extent in the Atlantic. It so happens that India has been given a pioneering assignment of about 50,000 kilometers, square kilometers. And the NIO has done extensive prospecting. And it's not as though there are no nodules. The concentration definitely is 10% as you find in the Pacific. It's a fact. Then the metal value also is half that in the Pacific Ocean. These two are limitations, no doubt. But when we don't have a better resource and we have possible access to this, the investigations are continuing. Definitely the ultimate proof of the pudding is how costly it is going to be. And that will be decided once the mining costs are better firmed up. And the processing cost, in another 2 years, we will know they are processing this low-grade deposit compared to the Pacific deposit, whether it will be viable on a scale of 3 million tons. But the resource is adequate to exploit. If you process at the rate of 3 million tons, it definitely will last for more than 100 years.
Mr. Gupta,
that is still a distant technology. What we are doing in the deep sea is oil, mining of oil we are doing.
Mr. Gupta,
when we give the metal values as copper, nickel, cobalt, manganese and also iron, that is the elemental value. The rest is hydroxide and moisture. Then not much of gang. So what we will be throwing back, if you are not going to require the manganese, will be the manganese and the iron. Otherwise, only the iron. Yes.
Roy, Professor Sundaram, and fellow participants, I consider myself honored to be given this privilege today to express our gratitude and appreciation to you, sir, for highlighting the importance of the seas around our subcontinent. Your knowledge on the subject of ocean engineering has been highly informative and educative, and as you really touched on various disciplines, the technology appears to be as vast as the ocean itself. Personally, if I am not sounding too harsh, I am of the opinion that any Indian who does not appreciate the importance of the sea, doesn't acknowledge the importance of ocean engineering, is truly not worth his salt. Sir, you have amply made it clear that during 3 decades plus of exposure to the sea has not in any way diminished the spirit of adventure, and you continue to write and deliver lectures on the neglected areas of the Indian Ocean. It's no wonder, sir, you have been entrusted with editorial responsibilities of the Journal of Indian Ocean Studies and have also been awarded the Nehru Fellowship for your project Emerging Relations Between India and Indian Ocean. I'm sure all participants would agree that the nation continues to be in the grip of sea blindness, as Admiral said. Perhaps the cure is only, maybe one of the solutions is giving Lord Varuna his due in our daily life. We seem to be giving more emphasis to the gods above the water. The only reason why sea blindness is ravaging could be the location of a landlocked capital. When one looks at the capital cities located on the seashore with their flourishing economies, a good example is the Asia Pacific Rim. It becomes amply evident, sir, that your presence here has contributed in all of us getting familiar with sea control, sea denial, sea energy, sea minerals, sea pollution control. In short, sir, you have conducted an oceanic cleansing of all participants by generating sea awareness here. Your knowledge on the historical, socio-economic, strategic, geographical and scientific aspects and your efforts to create sea awareness is bound to pay rich dividends in future. perhaps, as you had suggested, an ocean technology school on the lines of these law schools and economic school of economics, which have sprung up in many universities, would be useful in coordinating all the various 16 ministerial activities. I therefore wish you, sir, success in all your endeavors and many more awards in your attempt to place ocean engineering on the pedestal it deserves. Finally, I would like to thank Professor Sundaram for supporting Admiral Roy in highlighting ocean resources and the state of art in India. Today we got an example of an integrated approach to delivering lectures when both Professor Sundaram and Admiral Roy for the first time. Otherwise, Professor Sundaram was more of a participant with us right from the day we arrived here. We must thank Admiral Roy for bringing him in the limelight and for him to give us an enlightening talk today. So on behalf of NAIS and all fellow participants, I wish you both a wonderful future, sir. Gentlemen, please join me in